This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Neurothera from Claire Labs. Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimal performance. Neurothera is a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. Used daily, Neurothera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. For more information and to purchase Neurothera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. All right, let's continue our discussion of hemoglobin A1C. That's today's clinical focus. It's a blood test that gives us an indication of, on average, what is our blood sugar. And a lot of people rely on it like it's gospel, but is there potential for error? Can we go astray? And some people complain that, you know, I'm doing everything I can here. I'm eating practically a ketogenic diet, virtually no carbohydrates. I'm exercising like crazy. I'm getting a complex here because I read, you know, Dr. Perlmutter says we should get our hemoglobin A1C below 5.2. And no matter what I do, my hemoglobin A1C is 5.4, 5.5. Am I going to get Alzheimer's disease as a result? So there are some potential answers to that question because the hemoglobin A1C test is not foolproof. It doesn't always provide a perfect delineation of your blood sugar control. And there are several reasons. First, there's wobble. And by that I mean normal lab error. Now, a lot of lay people are used to precision in their professions. They're engineers, they're technical people, they're involved in very exacting professions, and they have greater faith in the accuracy of lab tests than is merited. And we in the medical profession recognize that there can be lab errors. There is no perfect lab test. Doing a lab test is a little bit like baking a cake. It has to be done under the perfect temperatures. It has to be done with the right reagents. It has to be timed perfectly. And it can get messed up. And surveys show that there can be as much as a 0.5% variation from lab to lab. That means that a hemoglobin A1C of 5.0 might be 5.5. Or vice versa. And that's a big margin of error for a test that is of such weighty import as a hemoglobin A1C. Now, I'm not saying it's always going to be that much of an error, but some improvements have been made in the technology used. But that before they introduced standardization in the hemoglobin A1C, errors were rampant. And that might mean the difference between optimal control and borderline diabetes. But even if the tests are accurate, let's keep in mind a salient fact, which is that the hemoglobin A1C is not measuring your sugar directly. It's measuring it indirectly, and it's predicated on the condition of your red blood cells and their lifespan. Okay? And any condition that alters that or that produces anemia can change the exposure window of the hemoglobin in your red blood cells to blood sugar. So, let's look at some examples. Heavy menstrual bleeding, or a recent operation that causes a lot of blood loss, or iron deficiency or B12 deficiency anemia, or sickle cell anemia, or even a relatively common thalassemia trait or sickle trait, common among persons of Asian, Mediterranean, or African background, can distort the test results. So the results need to be interpreted with caution, especially when they don't make a lot of sense. There have been cases of women who've been diagnosed with diabetes on the basis of an elevated hemoglobin A1C And then it was found that they had profound iron deficiency. And when their iron deficiency was corrected, they don't have elevated hemoglobin A1C anymore. They're normal. And this is actually a fact that I think a fairly large number of doctors don't know. I think that more education is being undertaken to train doctors that they better make sure that their patients with suspicious hemoglobin A1Cs don't have some of the underlying causes of distortion. So here's another one, and it's a little obscure, but I looked this up, and it's quite fascinating, and it's something that I've suspected for a long time. It's that there are genetic differences in the way that hemoglobin A1C reacts with sugar. By that I mean that two people with really perfect blood sugar could have different hemoglobin A1Cs due to their racial background or their ethnicity, and it's not dependable. You can't say, oh, you know, blacks and Asians have higher hemoglobin A1C. It's not always a reliable guidepost to interpreting hemoglobin A1C. These are called unknown confounders, which explain why some individuals are naturally prone to a higher or lower hemoglobin A1C than would be expected. So, knowing that, what are we to make now of the conflicting advice about hemoglobin A1C? So, you know, are we to adopt a position of the American College of Physicians that, yeah, don't worry about hemoglobin A1C that much because it can be 7 to 8 and that's okay, versus these other people who are on a jihad virtually to lower hemoglobin A1C as low as you can go? They're playing hemoglobin A1C limbo. How low can you go? And the answer is, it depends on how you get there. If you can get your hemoglobin A1C low through natural means, that is to your advantage, because the natural means are wholesome and healthy. They involve exercise, low-carb dieting. Certain nutraceuticals can help you do it. But if you do it via medication, there's some benefit to, obviously, keeping diabetes under control. You don't want to let someone have a hemoglobin A1C of 13 or 14. I've seen them go as high as that, because that's devastating. That's really, you're cooking all the proteins of your body with sugar. And that's a horrible perfect storm for premature organ damage, blindness, nerve loss, peripheral neuropathy, arterial damage leading to circulatory problems and amputations, and the host of problems that plague diabetics, not to mention premature cardiovascular disease. So you just don't want to be pickled in sugar. You want to lower your hemoglobin A1C by some means, preferably a natural method. But what they discovered, they did some studies. One of the first was the ACCORD study done, I believe, in the late 2000s. And the results were surprising because they wanted to vindicate the approach to aggressive blood sugar lowering. And this, of course, was, you know, one of the mainstays of diabetes management is get your blood sugar as low as possible through whatever means. You know, take 2, 3, 4 medications to get your blood sugar low. And what they discovered is that there is actually some diminishing returns. You could make the hemoglobin A1C low, but at the expense of episodes of hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, especially with insulin, which can cause blackouts, can cause falls and accidents. And also, many of these, especially oral hypoglycemics, have adverse side effects. So when the adverse side effects pile up, at the end of the day, you got patients with lower hemoglobin A1C but they don't live longer. There are no survival benefits that accrue from lowering hemoglobin A1C too low. The other problem is that the more insulin you use, and insulin will lower blood sugar, the more fat accumulates in the body. And that's not good, because when patients are obese, even if their blood sugar is low, or within what's considered a more acceptable range, you're trading one problem for another. The blood sugar's lower, but the obesity can take its toll. And also, insulin itself is atherogenic. It actually promotes cardiometabolic syndrome. We know that from type 2 diabetes, where blood sugar is not necessarily the culprit. It's actually the elevated insulin in response to the body's need to dispose of the high blood sugar that is the culprit in accelerating atherosclerosis and the risk of circulatory problems, heart attack, and stroke. Plus, all that fat is pro-inflammatory, and inflammation is not good for the body. It has deleterious effects. So the American College of Physicians guidelines arguing for more lenient hemoglobin A1C were based on these studies that showed that intensive blood sugar control in diabetics with insulin or oral medications generated more problems than benefits. Okay, folks, at this point, we usually allow our sponsors an opportunity to share a message with you, so here goes. Listen up. Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimum performance. Excessive release of adrenaline and cortisol, plus environmental exposures and oxygenation, may be impacting your alertness, memory, and other vital functions. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. It's NeuroThera from Claire Labs. NeuroThera provides balanced neuronutrition. Used daily, NeuroThera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It promotes blood, oxygen, and glucose delivery to the brain and helps protect against oxidative stress and inflammation. NeuroThera provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. I believe in NeuroThera so much that I've included it in the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol. For more information and to purchase NeuroThera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our discussion about hemoglobin A1C. What Perlmutter and Bernstein are talking about are radical hemoglobin A1C reductions achieved via lifestyle, mostly by stringent low-carb dieting and vigorous exercise. And that's the right way to achieve hemoglobin A1C reductions. Exercise, both aerobic exercise and resistance training, has been shown to be very effective at helping blood sugar control. And in Bernstein's paradigm for type 1 diabetics, what they do to achieve a hemoglobin A1C that's low, it's very hard to do that if you're type 1 diabetic. Again, most type 1 diabetics are, you know, happy when their blood sugar, when their hemoglobin A1C is around 7. And your doctor will say, oh, you know, that's great, you know, good enough. But not for Dr. Bernstein, who's considered sort of a radical in his field. But it requires a very, very dedicated patient to, if you're type 1 diabetic, to achieve that kind of hemoglobin A1C. And Dr. Bernstein is such a person. He really personifies that. He was fiddling around with his glucometer, constantly during our lectures in medical school. I remember, you know, this is like 40 years ago. And, he's getting on in years, and he's, you know, quite healthy and productive, which is an outlier for an older individual with type 1 diabetes. He is proof of principle that really helps to preserve your heart, your brain, and so on. But what it requires is that you use less insulin. And to use less insulin, you've got to frequently test, and you've got to use little microdoses of insulin, very tiny doses, many times during the day, 5-6 times a day, I don't know, perhaps more, and test yourself constantly. And that is can be a pain in the you-know-what, and it's not for the faint-hearted. It is truly for the exceptional patient. And some people, you know, it's just not for them, that they would want to forego that kind of very draconian management of precisely what you eat, precisely when you exercise, check, 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 put a little insulin in here and there. And, you know, it's an arduous and potentially tedious way of managing your blood sugar. But the rewards are great. The rewards can be really great because you're protecting your organs by keeping your hemoglobin A1C quite low. Most doctors, they're resigned to their patients' non-compliance. You know, they're happy when their patients can, you know, take, you know, a couple of medications consistently every day. I mean, you look at the statistics, and you know, only about 40% of Americans who are given prescription medications actually comply with their medication regimens. And the more medications you take, the lower the compliance rate. And some of it is about, you know, the fuss and bother. And some of it's about the side effects. People don't like the side effects. And some of it's about the expense. People simply can't afford to buy all that costly medication. And so they cut corners and they don't take their meds. So most doctors say, look, for safety's sake, so that you don't get blood sugar that's too low and you don't get medication side effect, we're going to ease up. And this actually was a little bit of a slap in the face to the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry would have been very happy if the study showed that yes, very, very intensive blood sugar management is the way to go. It's kind of a repudiation of that principle. Is they say, well, you know, let the blood sugar go up a little bit. It's better than overdoing it on medication. And that's where the confusion comes in for my patient, who is probably, my listener, probably non-diabetic, and you know, certainly people who who are normal or just maybe a little borderline in their hemoglobin A1C, that guideline of 7 to 8 is not applicable. And you know, hope it doesn't create confusion for the general public that we can just forget about the critical nature of hemoglobin A1C. So I say, bottom line, go for the gold when it comes to hemoglobin A1C. I think the targeting a sub 5.0 hemoglobin A1C is a little unrealistic, and it may require unfaltering adherence to a ketogenic diet and you know, very, very intensive exercise. But shooting for a 5.0 to 5.4 should help you minimize the effects of glycation without becoming too wrapped up in managing your blood sugar, which also, you know, life is short, and this can become a tedious obsession if you're too fixated on it. And the other thing is, I'm surprised that in the discussion of hemoglobin A1C, that Perlmutter and Bernstein don't allow for the fact that some people just inherently, even with good control, try as they might, they cannot get their hemoglobin A1C below a certain level, and that's due to certain genetic factors that we mentioned earlier. Some people just may be locked into hemoglobin A1C at best of 5.4, and they worry, you know, oh my goodness, I can't get it to where these you know, advocates for low hemoglobin A1C want me to go. Of interest is, in terms of lowering hemoglobin A1C, is one particular nutraceutical, which is berberine. It's a constituent of golden seal and Oregon grapefruit, actually less these days from golden seal, because golden seal is kind of an endangered species, and expensive and hard to get. In a small pilot study, admittedly relatively small, a group of patients with type 2 diabetes were given berberine, just 500 milligrams three times daily, versus the medication metformin for 3 months. Metformin is a diabetes medication that actually, of all the diabetes medications, it's the one I like the best because its side effects are pretty minimal. It can cause some gastrointestinal side effects, but most people tolerate it. And it usually doesn't cause a lot of trouble. You have to watch out for your B12 levels when you take it because it depletes B12. But the nice thing about metformin is that it doesn't cause much hypoglycemia. And it's one of the few diabetes medications that doesn't cause weight gain and actually may help to curb appetite to some extent, which is good. And can even be used sometimes in people for weight loss purposes. And for, you know, it's also something that seems to have anti-cancer effects and possibly anti-aging effects. There's some research going on at my medical school, Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Dr. Jacques Barcelay is conducting research on older patients recruiting for a study, giving them metformin, even if they don't have diabetes, to see if it has life extension properties. But anyway, coming back to the berberine, it appears that berberine works on the, at least in part, one of its routes of action is via the microbiome. It seems to have an antibacterial effect or a bactericidal effect, perhaps changing the intestinal flora in a favorable way. We know that metabolism is related to your microbiome. And berberine may have a favorable effect on that. It probably has some direct action on the cells, too. But in this study, the hypoglycemic effect of berberine was similar to that of metformin. There were significant decreases in hemoglobin A1C from, get this, 9.5, which is frankly diabetic. These are all diabetic patients, by the way, to 7.5%. So 9.5 to 7.5, that's as good as any medication, and it performed comparably to the metformin. By the way, I think that result is a little bit too good to be true. If a more long-term and larger studies were undertaken, I think the result would be less spectacular. Nonetheless, it gets our attention and suggests that berberine can be an adjunct to diet and exercise for managing your hemoglobin A1C. And my favorite berberine product is called CM Core, and the CM stands for cardiometabolic. So for patients with cardiometabolic syndrome, say you got a hemoglobin A1C of 5.9 and your lipids aren't so great and your waistline is a little expanded, low-carb diet, aerobic and strength training, and berberine could really make a difference. And, you know, can't tell you the number of patients I've seen where we made a crucial difference, I think, in their quality of their life and their potential longevity by screening them with a hemoglobin A1C, by pointing out that it's slightly elevated before their conventional physicians acknowledge that they're well on their way to diabetes, and by instituting lifestyle changes along with supplementation to head off the problem. And it's so gratifying because these people then normalize and optimize their hemoglobin A1C, which is truly one of the keys to health and happiness. I say, when it comes to hemoglobin A1C, go for it. Try to optimize your hemoglobin A1C. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more.
These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.